नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So today we'll be starting a new chapter. This is Canto 10. It'll be chapter 9. And I will begin reading the introduction to the chapter. This will be followed by two verses, both of which I will recite alone. And then the first verse I will go back to and we will recite it responsively. Okay? So let me begin with the again, this is the introduction to the chapter. Mother Yashoda binds Lord Krishna. This is the Damodara pastimes, for those of you who may recall, in October. While Mother Yashoda was allowing Krishna to drink her breast milk, she was forced to stop because she saw the milk pan boiling over on the oven. The maidservants being engaged in other business, she stopped allowing Krishna to drink from her breast and immediately attended to the overflowing milk pan. Krishna became very angry because of his mother's behavior and devised a means of breaking the pots of yogurt. Because he created this disturbance, Mother Yashoda decided to bind him. These incidents are described in this chapter. So now there's a recap of what we just said. I don't know why it was done twice, but nonetheless, that's the way it reads. One day, the maidservants being engaged in other work, Mother Yashoda was churning the yogurt into butter herself. And in the meantime, Krishna came and requested her to allow him to suck her breast. He had been sleeping nearby, and then he woke up, and so then he approached her. Excuse me, her breast milk. Of course, Mother Yashoda immediately allowed him to do so, but then she saw that the hot milk on the oven was boiling over, and therefore she immediately stopped allowing Krishna to drink the milk of her breast and went to stop the milk on the oven from overflowing. Krishna, however, having been interrupted in his business of sucking the breast, was very angry. All right. He took a piece of stone, broke the churning pot, and entered a room where he began to eat the freshly churned butter. When Mother Yashoda, after attending to the overflowing milk, returned and saw the pot broken, she could understand that this was the work of Krishna, and therefore she went to search for him. When she entered the room, she saw Krishna standing on the Ulukala, a large mortar for grinding spices. Having turned the mortar upside down, he was stealing butter hanging from a swing and was distributing the butter to the monkeys. As soon as Krishna saw that his mother had come, he immediately began to run away. And Mother Yashoda began to follow him. After going some distance, Mother Yashoda was able to catch Krishna, who because of his offense was crying. Mother Yashoda, of course, threatened to punish Krishna if he acted that way again, and she decided to bind him with rope. Unfortunately, when the time came to knot the rope with which she wanted to bind him was short by a distance equal to the width of how many fingers? 2 fingers, yes. When she made the rope longer by adding another rope, she again saw that it was short by 2 fingers. By 2 fingers means generally the width of the finger, not the length of the fingers, but not like one finger and then one finger. It's the width of the 2 fingers, just a little bit. When she made the rope longer by adding another rope, she again saw that it was short by 2 fingers. Again and again she tried, and again she found the rope too short by 2 fingers. Thus she became very tired. And Krishna, seeing his affectionate mother so tired, allowed himself to be bound. Now, being compassionate, he did not show her his unlimited potency. He acted like he was just a helpless little boy who needs his mother. So he did not show her his unlimited potency. After Mother Yashoda bound Krishna and became engaged in other household affairs, Krishna observed 2 Yamala Arjun trees, which were actually Nalakuvara and Manigriva, 2 sons of Kuvera, who had been condemned by Narada Muni to become trees. Kuvera is the treasurer of the demigods. Krishna, by his mercy, now began to proceed toward the trees, the 2 trees, to fulfill the desire of Narada Muni. That desire was to liberate them from a horrible, grievous condition of basically animalistic mentality. Here, they were the sons of the demigod Kuvera, and they were acting like the lowest of the low. So Narada Muni had some compassion, and he cursed them to become trees. So now we go to the verse. I will chant the verse, the first and the second one, and then we will do them together responsively. Sri Shuka Uvacha Ekada Grahadasi Shu Yashoda Nanda Gehini Karmantara Niyuktasu Nirmamanta Svayam Dadi. And the second, Yani Yani Ha Gitanihi Tadbala Charitani Cha Dadadi Nirmantani Kale Smaranti Tanyagayatam. Sri Shuka Uvacha Ekada Grahada Ekada Grahada Sishu Yashodananda Gehini Yashodananda Gehini Karmanantare Niyuktasu Nirmamanta Svayam Dadi. Sri Shuka Uvacha Ekada Grahadasi Shu Yashodananda Gehini Karmantara Niyatasu Nirmamanta Svayam Dadi. Please chant. Thank you.
to.
Ladies, please. Synonyms. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, Ekada, one day, Graha Dasishu, when all the maidservants of the household were otherwise engaged, Yashoda, Mother Yashoda, Nandagahini, the Queen of Nanda, or Nanda Maharaj, I should say, Karma Antara, in other household affairs, Niyuktasu, being engaged, Nirmamanta, churned, Svayam, personally, Dati, the yogurt. So those are the synonyms for that verse. There are other synonyms for the other verse, but since we're not doing that, no need to do them. Translation. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued, one day when Mother Yashoda saw that all the maidservants were engaged in other household affairs, she personally began to churn the yogurt. While churning, she remembered the childish activities. Childish activities of Krishna, and in her own way, she composed songs and enjoyed singing to herself about all those activities. Please repeat. Sri Shukdeva Goswami continued. One day, when Mother Yashoda saw that all the maidservants were engaged in other household affairs, she personally began to churn the yogurt. While churning, She remembered the childish activities of Krishna. Sorry. And in her own way, she composed songs and enjoyed singing to herself about all those activities. Purport. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, quoting from the Vaishnava Toshani of Srila Sanatan Goswami, says that the incident of Krishna's breaking the pot of yogurt and being bound by Mother Yashoda took place on the Deepavali day, otherwise known as Diwali, or Deepamalika. Even today in India, this festival is generally celebrated very gorgeously in the month of Kartik by fireworks and lights, especially in Bombay. It is to be understood that among all the cows of Nanda Maharaj, several of Mother Yashoda's cows ate only grasses so flavorful that the grasses would automatically flavor the milk. Mother Yashoda wanted to collect the milk from these cows, make it into yogurt, and churn it into butter personally, since she thought that this child, Krishna, was going to the houses of neighborhood gopas and gopis to steal butter because he did not like the milk and yogurt ordinarily prepared. While churning the butter, Mother Yashoda was singing about the childhood activities of Krishna. It was formerly a custom that if one wanted to remember something constantly, he would transform it into poetry or have this done by a professional poet. It appears that Mother Yashoda did not want to forget Krishna's activities at any time. Therefore, she poeticized all of Krishna's childhood activities, such as the killing of Putana, Agasura, Shakatasura, and Trinavrata. And while churning the butter, she sang about these activities in poetical form. This should be the practice of persons eager to remain Krishna conscious 24 hours a day. This incident shows how Krishna conscious mother, this incident shows how Krishna conscious Mother Yashoda was. To stay in Krishna consciousness, we should follow such persons. Omaginati mirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmaditam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. So there are a number of points that I could make, but we have very little time as a result of the introductory narration. But just one little point to begin with. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentioned that this pastime took place on Deepavali, or Diwali. And Diwali is a very festive occasion in which persons all over India celebrate it. And it glorifies the triumph or victory of Lord Ramchandra over the demon Ravan, who had kidnapped his wife. And after a tremendous battle between Ram and his monkey soldiers, and Ravan with his very well-armed soldiers, Lord Ramachandra finally killed him. And after that, Lord Ramachandra, along with his brother Lakshman, and Sita Devi and Vibhishan and Hanuman, they all got on this, what is known as an airplane. So they had airplanes there. It was called the Pushpaka. And it was made of flowers. And it operated by mantra. One gave the airplane a command, and it went where it had to go. So after 14 years of being in exile, Lord Ramachandra, having fulfilled the promise that his father, King Dasarath, had made to his wife, Kakayi, that Lord Ramachandra would remain in the forest for 14 years, he then returned to Ayodhya. Now, on that night, it was a new moon night, so therefore it was extremely dark. And when the citizens heard that Lord Ramachandra was returning, they wanted to make sure that there was enough light, not only for them to see him, but for him to see all the areas, such as the streets and the houses and the different places that they would be passing. So therefore, candles were lit in houses, they were lit on the windowsills, they were lit in the doorways. When seen from above, the whole city was, you might say, a riot with bright lights. So that's why it's called the Festival of Lights. And those lights were put on to welcome Lord Ramachandra and to basically celebrate gladly his return from the forest and his victory over Ravan. So now, coming back to the actual pastime here. Unfortunately, I have all these pages and they don't make it easy. Yes, so the next point I want to make is, which is very interesting, that Mother Yashoda, when she would be churning the yogurt or churning the butter, she would sing very, very beautiful poetic songs in her appreciation of Lord Sri Krishna. This is very interesting because, as we know, that she is a Mahabhagavat, she is a Nitya Siddha, and this is the nature of such a person. They cannot for a moment, even though they are doing one act, they accompany that act with some loving expression. In this case, it was a lovable or loving song. And so the interesting aspect of this is that the more she would sing about Krishna's pastimes, the more delightful, the more delectable, the more enjoyable they would become. Because not only would she just be singing and hearing the sounds, but she would also be visualizing them. She would see Krishna killing Putana. She would see him killing Trinarvata. And she would see his beautiful face and his lotus-like eyes and his embraceable or lovable form. And that would ever increasingly contribute to more and more of her ecstasy. So while she was doing service, she was becoming more and more ecstatic. So her main point, her main interest, her main concern was the service of Krishna, and that meant to give pleasure to Krishna, to enable him to feel even, if you will, happier from that service. And basically, Krishna does not need anything. He has everything. He's all-powerful. He's the controller. He can have anything he wants just by his wish. But the one thing that he especially loves is the love, the pure love, through devotional service of his devotee. That love is consonant with or in attunement with his love. And when he sees, when he experiences, when he observes the love of his pure devotees, such as Mother Yashoda, that increases his joy. We know that Krishna is Satchit Ananda Vigraha. Ananda means blissful. So his nature is to be blissful always. There's never a moment where Krishna is really grievous, sorrowful, or miserable. He is the love god, the bliss god, Ananda god. So, so anyway, what would happen was that she would become absorbed and spiritually or transcendentally intoxicated by just singing these beautiful songs in the melodies that she sang them in. And she would see Krishna in her mind or in her heart. And in so doing, she would feel more and more ecstatic. So taking care of Krishna or raising Krishna was not a chore. It was truly a pleasure. Sometimes some mothers may complain, oh, I have to do this and I have to do that, you know, I have to change him, I have to bathe him, and all of these activities that Mother Yashoda performed were done with joyfulness, were done with greedy interest. She loved doing them because it was the way that she interacted with and related to Krishna. And in so doing, her love continued to increase. And when Krishna would receive this love, he appreciated it, he recognized it, and he would respond to it, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. And the reward is that he doesn't give them any money, his pure devotees. He doesn't give them any money, doesn't give them any homes, doesn't give them wealth, doesn't give them fame, doesn't give them knowledge. He just gives them himself, which is Satchit Ananda Vigraha, eternality, knowledge, and bliss absolute. Giving of himself is the greatest gift that any devotee could receive. Even Krishna himself said to the gopis of Vrindavan on the night of the full moon of the Ras Lila night, he said to them towards the latter part of the pastime that there is no way that I can ever repay you. What you have given me is unrepayable, so you please just be satisfied with your own devotional service. That's the best that I can do. So what did he mean by that? Being satisfied with their devotional service means total surrender, which gave them the transcendental bliss that Krishna was expressing towards them. So they were all blissful, they were all happy, they were all very satisfied. But it was not it was not the kind of satisfaction in which one simply thinks of himself. It was the kind of satisfaction that one gets which makes him or her think, let me do more for Krishna. I've done really nothing. So we are feeling this joy, this bliss, this blessing. And the net result is more service. That is the difference between materialistic service and devotional service. In devotional service, we continue to think of, dwell upon, how we can increase the pleasure of Krishna. In all of our different services, some of us are dressing the deities. So we're not just throwing objects on the deities or just putting clothes on them, but we're thinking, here is my beloved Lord. Let me try to do this in such a way that he will especially be pleased. That is the only concern, the satisfaction of Krishna. So Krishna sees that, he hears that, he feels that, and he responds from within and causes the devotee to feel very joyful, very blissful. So when our service is such that we are one-pointedly thinking of the pleasure of Krishna, the satisfaction of Krishna, Krishna is receiving that. And in receiving it, he reciprocates with it. And he reciprocates in such a way that the devotee feels that, yes, Krishna is feeling this, and the devotee only and simply wants to continue lovingly serving Krishna. So in this level of devotional service, what we have is that we have in such a level, such persons who don't allow any distraction, who don't allow any diversion, who don't allow any interruption, who keep their minds so totally absorbed, so totally so totally absorbed and in Krishna, then that way, that impression that is made in the mind, their own mind, is naturally, it repeats itself. We all have this experience. Sometimes we are all in the kirtan and we're singing one of the very catchy melodies. And after it's all over and we come outside into the street, some devotees, they're still humming or singing that tune. And why is that? Because it gives pleasure. And what is the pleasure? The pleasure of feeling close to Krishna, feeling near to Him. The pleasure of being associated with Him. The remembrance that the name of Krishna is non-different from Krishna Himself. And the very idea, which is a really amazing, astonishing, mind-blowing idea, that just by singing the glorious, wonderful, beautiful name Krishna, I am associating with Him. I'm touching Him with my throat, my voice. I'm touching Him with my tongue. I'm touching Him with my eyes when I see Him. But especially when we are chanting the name, it is not merely a sound, but it is a person. And as we get that realization more and more, then we realize that Krishna has made Himself readily available to us in the form of His holy name. In this age, it is very difficult to meditate on whether you're meditating on the light within, or one is meditating on the super soul within, or meditating even on the form of Krishna within. This is very difficult. Because the mind is Kali Yuga, mind is jumpy. It's always wavering. It's referred to very much like the antics of a monkey. A monkey goes from branch to branch to branch to branch. It doesn't stop, or if it stops, it's for a few moments. It's always jumping around. So the mind is very difficult to control. And so Krishna has provided a means by which we can easily control the mind using music and music sound, and the combination of the two. What happens is that we actually begin to slowly but surely, number one, purify our heart of all the anarthas that we have, you know, the lust and anger and greed and envy and illusion and all of these things which tend to distract us, divert us, hinder us in our upward climb towards pure love of God. So as we get involved in the singing, you see, and absorbed in it, in the name of Krishna, in the beautiful tunes of Krishna, we become caught up in this. And so much advancement is being made. We don't even know how much advancement. We can't calculate. But we just have to think about it. When we're actually in touch with Krishna and also some of His advanced devotees, the result is that we feel peaceful and joyful and blissful, and we want to go out. And what is it? This kind of happiness is unique. It's not the kind of happiness that we just keep for ourselves or merely share with our family members, but we want to share it with the whole world. That's the kind of love and bliss that Krishna has. He doesn't confine it to Himself or just His pure devotees. He gives it out in every which way, all over the world. He gives rain to the criminals as well as to the blessed devotees. He gives food to the criminals as well as the blessed devotees. He is unstintingly committed to serving all of His children. Of course, those children who defy Him, deride Him, or decline to worship Him, they may get food, they may get clothing, they may get shelter and so forth, but they all get also get miseries which come of their own, miseries which come from one's own body and mind, miseries which come from other living entities, and miseries which come from catastrophes and natural disturbances. So the devotee, on the other hand, he may also be in a situation where there are miseries, for example, which come from the demigods, snow and heavy rains, earthquakes, tsunamis, and floods, and typhoons, tornadoes. Devotees are there too. But the difference between the devotee and the non-devotee is that the non-devotee feels intense misery, and the result, that is the result of their attachments that they have to their body, their mind, their clothes, their shelter, their cars, their homes. That's all they have. Nothing else, nothing more. That is it. So therefore, they're miserable. But the devotee, he also has a house, he has a car, but those all belong to Krishna. And that's the difference. Whatever a devotee owns, he knows he doesn't own it. It's given by Krishna as a gift. And this is the mentality of Mother Yashoda, that all she knows is that Krishna, she doesn't think of Krishna as God. She doesn't think of Krishna, you know, as glorious. She just sees him as her lovable, adorable, huggable child. And the more she looks at him, the more pleasure, the more joy, the more happiness, the more fulfillment she receives. And so, therefore, Mother Yashoda, as it's mentioned in the purport, is a very ideal person. Ideal in the sense that we should try to follow in her footsteps. Yes, when we're walking on the street or driving in the car, we can be singing some of the beautiful tunes of Krishna rather than putting on some news or some nonsense, non-devotional music or whatever. And by doing that, we gradually get into the habit of remembering Krishna, because with the words and with the tune goes the remembrance of the pastimes. When we remember the pastimes, it means we are in the transcendental condition. The more we get into that condition, the more we become that. That becomes our natural consciousness, as opposed to the other consciousness, which is tinged with materiality. I want this, I want that, I need this, I need that. No, what we have is, the only thing we need, the only thing we want is the opportunity to serve Krishna today, tomorrow, and all days. Now, it's very interesting about this humming, or not humming, but remembering the chant, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. So remembering this in a musical form, as I said, it gets to become a habit. And once we develop it as a habit, it becomes a tendency. And a tendency develops into a characteristic. And a characteristic develops into what? Into a destiny. So we change our destiny by chanting this holy name and realizing how wonderful, how glorious, how amazing it is, and how fortunate we are to have such an incredible grace heaped upon us. Billions of people all over the world don't have this grace. So our business, of course, as I mentioned, Krishna, what he does, what he's always happy, and he shares himself, shares his happiness. So we can share our happiness every way and any way by trying to distribute the knowledge of Krishna consciousness in the form of the books, in the form of nice prasadam, in the form of nice, sweet preaching. Anything we can do to get the holy name into people's ears so that they can get liberation starts immediately as soon as they hear the Hare Krishna mantra, or even the name of Krishna. If you read the Ajamil pastime, this is what happened. He uttered the name of Narayan, and he was on the way to hell, and the Vishnu Dutas came and intercepted and saved his life. And then he went on, he came on, he realized what he had done after so many years. He went to Hardwar, he chanted, and eventually he went back. He was a criminal. He raped women. He beat old, elderly people. He disregarded his parents and treated them horribly. He committed every sin that we can imagine. But in spite of that, he became absolved of all of his sins. Yes, completely free of those sins by virtue of the fact that he had uttered the name of his son. Wasn't even thinking of God, just thinking of his son. And Krishna had arranged this because in his early days he was a very excellent Brahmin. So Krishna never forgot the blessed activities, the sattvic activities of him when he was younger. So he arranged so that his last son would be named Narayan, and that would be the means to be freed, to be liberated from this horrible situation that he had gotten himself into. So, of course, the Vishnu Dutas, they did what was necessary. They told the Yama Dutas, get out, leave, he's free, you can't take him to Yamaraj, because you would be committing or violating an offense against the holy name. So they left, and of course they got an explanation from Yamaraj. And as I said, his name of Puddin? Ajamil, yes, thank you. So Ajamil, he went to Haridwar, and then near the end of the pastime, when he's completely purified, completely ecstatic and happy, the two Vishnu Dutas, or the servants of Vishnu, who had stopped the Yamadutas from taking him, to Yamaraj, they appeared there with an airplane and told him, step right up, step right in. And on they went up to the spiritual world. So getting back to the point of Mother Yashoda, we also, you see, I remember many years ago how this, which is being explained very nicely by Srila Prabhupada, how by repeating musically a particular song or group of very catchy lyrics can repeat themselves over and over. When I was 7 or 8 years old, there was no such thing as television. What we had in those days was radio. Many people kept their radios out on the windowsills. So when you would walk down the street, you would hear the different radio commercials. And usually they had these soap operas during the street, so you know every 7 or 8 minutes you would hear some type of a commercial. So as you'd walk down the street, you'd hear one. After a while, without even trying, because these they called them jingles. These jingles were so catchy, so absorbing, and so so easy to remember. You could hear it a few times, and you'd be see it yourself, and you would not forget it. You know, you'd be walking by yourself, and automatically this, I can still remember that jingle that Pepsi Cola used to put when I was 7 years old. I said, it never got out of my head. Maybe that's why I'm not a pure devotee, because I'm thinking of Pepsi Cola instead of Krishna Prasadam. But yeah, I still remember. It went like, Pepsi Cola hits the spot, 12 full ounces, that's a lot. A nickel buys a bottle too. Pepsi Cola is the drink for you. So there were so many of these that we had. The point is that you didn't have to make an effort. And if you start by making an effort, eventually it won't be an effort, because it will bubble up and take over our consciousness. So I leave with everyone here. First of all, I want to thank you all for listening. It's a pleasure, and I beg for your prayers and blessings that I can go on preaching. This is always a great opportunity, and I also pray for all the devotees here that they may continue doing the same, because there is no other way to achieve true, real, undying, enduring, everlasting happiness. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Jai Prabhuji, Hare Krishna.